will play
that's not how
the
I roll.
Theme.
Oh,
no, 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 not that, not that. Let's see here. Nope, the theme is nowhere near
so big G,
where
Dennis,
I was.
Anything you want to say in the chat room to entertain
us,
to make us feel better about this technical difficulty?
Let's see here. Wow. All right.
Now, by the way, Jeff.
Yeah.
Love you, but I'm glad you're not a pilot.
Yeah.
Because right now. Thank you, Bennett.
Hello,
not a problem.
And
you
welcome to
much.
A special interactive episode of Roni's Own Radio. A very, very different podcast.
Ain't it, though?
Roni's Own Radio.
I want to introduce you all. It's okay to visit jrd-now.com. It's all right.
I think you'll find the show interesting, whatever you believe or if you don't believe. And we had a lively discussion.
In the Roni Zone, we examine subjects across the social, political, spiritual, and cultural spectrum.
We're going to talk about our trip to Hawaii, and then we're going to talk about the Da Vinci Code.
We're going to talk about camera phones.
Creative and yet beneficial uses of the camera phone.
Now, we're going to be talking about dating in the 2000s.
Is Star Wars dead? This time, we're going to be talking about pranks, okay?
Probably one of the greatest sci-fi shows on TV of all time.
Why Bad Boys? Why? 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 Why do women go after Bad Boys? Can you please tell me?
Really get to the heart of an issue.
Featuring lively discussions, in-depth interviews, and diverse topics, Roni's Own Radio is a very, very different podcast.
Get Mr. Bob Christman on the phone.
I am privileged to have John Cosgrove with me on the phone.
How's it going?
I am sitting with two beautiful ladies. They're not as beautiful as my wife.
If my husband was here, I'd kind of go rawr and scare him with the nails.
They come a close second and third.
Saying, all right, we want this to be as good as it can get.
There was one that I thought was really fascinating.
Here's the bottom line.
Well, okay, it's basically whatever Jeff Roni wants to talk about. But hey, that's what makes Roni's Own Radio special.
That I think TV shows and films as didactic pieces are not used as much as they should be. You have to kind of close an eye and look a little to the left and not see. Celebration, I don't know if you knew this, is Latin for standing in a line.
Low understanding of women, because I don't know at all about women.
Roni's Own Radio is the zombie that won't die. There's no stopping it.
And it's just about stupid stuff, usually.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to stay calm.
This is the Roni Zone. No hype, just real questions, real answers, real people, and great discussions.
Well, before we go, I'm going to pull out a little crystal ball. Buckle up, get ready.
Do we need to wear anything special for this segment?
No.
All right.
Here's the bottom line. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com.
Radio.
Well, I think there was a little editing.
Thank you for joining this interactive special edition of Roni's Own Radio. Now, here's the host, Mr. Jeff Roni.
The show that cannot be killed. They cannot pull the recorder. They cannot take us off the air. We will continue to be here. We are like things that won't go away. All right. Now,
I've smelled that before.
We are recording from my house where I know things work. Now, as long as Skype keeps me on, we're going to be just fine. Hello.
I started worrying about the same thing.
Yeah. Hello to those that have joined. And I think one of the folks maybe just hit a wrong button and just, you know, searching around for, you know, Shakespeare plays written in Pig Latin or something. I don't know. But anyway, we are here. This is Roni's Own Radio. My name is Jeff Roni, and I am joined by Mr. William Lundin, your buddy Bill, my buddy Bill, everybody's buddy Bill. There you go.
That's me.
That's you. Now,
that's great. Thank you.
Let's kind of dive into the first subject since we're a little tardy now and we kind of started a little late. We love comedy films, and one comedy director we love is Mel Brooks. Mr. Mel Brooks is real funny, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he was a later day Jeff Roney.
Yes. Before Jeff Roney was Jeff Roney, it was, yeah. But Mr. Mel Brooks really has a wide variety of comedy stuff. I mean, what's interesting is to think about Get Smart. He had a hand in Get Smart. And he also did a lot of films. So that it's not just, he wasn't just a director. But when people start talking about Mel Brooks, most people mention Blazing Saddles. But
could you not?
Well, true. What's very interesting is most of the jokes you really can't say on any type of TV or radio or out loud now. And what was interesting is I watched the Blazing Saddles commentary, and he says, you know, he says people at the time this movie came out, he goes, a lot of people got upset. He goes, but the people that I expected to get upset, they understood what I was trying to say and what I was getting at. And he goes, and that made it worthwhile to me. Because you watch it now and you go, oh, we can't make that movie now. it's just impossible. Even though Richard Pryor was one of the one of the people they wanted to get as the Cleavon Little role, and you know, Richard Pryor was one of the writers, and so you know, it's like
it can't be tame if Richard's writing.
Well, yeah, it's like Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, being Borat. You know, you laugh at a couple of jokes, you know, and that from Borat that demeans Jewish people, and then you go, well, wait a minute, his name is Sacha Baron Cohen. Oh, I see. You know, so it was that whole time, you know, where it wasn't okay to make, you know, racist jokes, but if Richard Pryor is writing, you know, them, then it's okay, and it's kind of funny, and you got to, oh, okay, I can take a breath, and I can actually laugh. But it was very interesting if you start to kind of look back at all his different films. I, myself, are a huge Hitchcock fan, and his film High Anxiety was just, you know, a tour de force of, you know, tip of the hat, and just poke a lot of fun at the whole, you know, suspense Hitchcock film. Have you seen High Anxiety?
I admit to have not seen it.
Wow. Okay.
I've seen Vertigo, The Birds, The Psycho Thingy, the one with the boat, smaller boat with the guy on it in the newspaper. High Anxiety.
Okay.
I'll put it in my Netflix queue.
All right. But when people start talking about probably one of the greatest films that Mel Brooks has done, it was The Producers. Would you agree with the original?
You know, for me, it was one of those that I didn't see repeated on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see Blazing Saddles show up on Comedy Central and other places now and then. You'd see Spaceballs or whatever. But Springtime for Hitler, for whatever reason, the song,
mm-hmm.
When I saw that in the movie, I said, oh my gosh, this guy's a nut. And I kept waiting for it to show up again, because back then it was VHS, you have to find it in the store, and they didn't have that, but they had 50 million copies of, I don't know, I can't remember that stupid desert movie. But
Paradise?
This didn't show up. No, it was a really bad one. Ishtar. There we go. So it just didn't show up as much as some of the others. But for me, I thought it was a lot more clever. Because like you mentioned, Blazing Saddles, you know, they did have a lot in there,
right,
which had to do with racial mm-hmm. issues mm-hmm. And terms and stuff like that. And for me, I thought, okay, well, I was over it. I was a different age, so it was like overdone for me. But I used to absorb anything that had a touch of the whole World War II or, you know, war drama, you know, especially Hogan's Heroes, you know, Schultz, I know nothing, you know, that sort of stuff. And so when I saw this, I go, wait a minute, but I don't get it. There's these guys dancing around in tights and they're wearing German uniforms. So it confused me. I want to see it again. I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was clever in many different ways with the casting and the idea that sure. they're going to make a play that loses money so they can make money.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be able to do that in Monopoly. I thought for sure there was going to be a secret in this movie that I could use.
Now, the original had, and his name is escaping, Gene Wilder. I think that was Gene Wilder's first film, if I'm not mistaken. And hopefully the boys from Hollywood Saloon are listening and will send me, you know, just boatloads of emails just cursing me. But, no, I think it was Gene Wilder's first film. And
like the guy. Zero
Mostel was in it. And mm-hmm. also the now there is always kind of a pivotal film in everybody's mind that's just the greatest of whatever type of genre. And we're not gonna talk about it, but I just want to mention it is my favorite kind of rompy, zany, wild extravaganza film was What's Up, Doc? With Barbara Streisand. That was just a romp, just zany, crazy movie. I love that movie. And
was that a Woody Allen movie?
No, it was Peter Bogdanovich. Yeah.
Oh gosh, what was the Woody Allen one I was thinking of? Anyway, yeah, oh, that's
and,
great.
And so there was a German or Russian guy with a really heavy accent, and he played the crazy German guy. And anyway, he went on to play in What's Up, Doc? But anyway, he played the crazy guy that wrote the play
the
producers, right. And he was just really, really cool. So, I mean, these were great actors that they pulled together. And just the whole idea is let's write a play that's just the worst play in the world. You know, Springtime for Hitler and all that. I mean, it's a funny premise. I mean, I could just imagine, you know, whatever studio produced a film just saying, it's crazy, but this Mel Brooks guy, he yeah, okay, let's roll it. Let's roll with it. Let's do it. So
he'll pull it off.
Yeah. Now, you saw the original. What did you think of that, or did you ever finally get to see it after watching Ishtar or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I liked it again. I still liked going back to it, you know. I found in viewing it, it was a good alone film or just with someone you know film, whereas Blazing Saddles really, to enhance the viewing of it, you'd want four or five guys.
Oh, sure.
And you could have a chick there, too. But you know, to really enjoy the fart jokes, you want to be able to have a few going off before and afterwards. So, but that didn't seem to play into the Springtime for Hitler. You know, you might want to actually just sort of dress up in your lederhosen and have a few dark beers, you know, and start singing, beer here, all day, follow Buckeye, you know, and then maybe, you know, put on the tights and start dancing around like the choreographer and whatever. But those really aren't good group activities unless you run in different groups than I do.
Huh.
I shared too much there, didn't I? Let's go back to what you were saying.
Now, then it was in 2000, probably 3 or something like that, when they announced that there would be a producer sequel. And, you know, they were looking for stars, and then Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane were hired, and Uma Thurman.
You jumped the gun, Jeff.
Okay. So
you jumped the gun. You forgot about the play.
Yeah, there you go. Then the play came along and started really churning interest, and it's It's very interesting that the life of plays these days. I don't know if you've. It was funny. There for a while, it was kind of a wasteland for Broadway. There just really wasn't a lot of great plays. And
yeah, that gets, another season for Cats. Cats.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Disney came along, and, you know, we had, you know, The Lion King and that kind of a thing, and that kind of revitalized this kind of new vision of plays. Obviously, Phantom of the Opera, that kind of a thing. But then there's things like Spamalot, there's things like The Producers, and it's interesting that Broadway now is just, it's not just about, you know, romantic, big epic stories, but it's about just zany, crazy, wild, funny plays, which, you know, Producers. Go ahead.
They've got to compete with, the TV, the videos,
right.
The short attention span, and all those stuff. I mean, not to say that I think that good musicals and operas and classical performances of any kind benefited by being thought of as something special when not everyone could access them directly. And because of that, they attained a status which people would want to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
But once the prices came down, once the show had been on for 10,000 showings, and everyone who wanted to see it had seen it, they lost some of that allure. They didn't have that same sort of draw. They became as common as seeing, you know, Andy Griffith's show, but by losing its special taste or flavor, they didn't have a reason to go to it. It wasn't a bragging point anymore.
Right.
It wasn't a once in a lifetime event. So I think that kind of did them in. Now, I think there's something interesting going on with the New York Met right now that might bring offers back to people in a different way. I'll just say that. Like, near us in Irvine, every now and then the Spectrum in their movie theaters is hosting or broadcasting an HD TV for the screen or whatever, some sort of special gobbledygook, you know, live broadcasts of operas. It just started recently, and I think it's going to be an outstanding success, and I hope that we can get in and try some. But, you know, because if you take something that's only being performed one place, and because that's people either will never see it
right.
or can't because of travel or whatever, but now you say, we've got these movie theaters, and they're not being used at 10 a.m. or 2 p.m. on a Sunday, or, let's face it, it was the third screen for Babe 3, Bacon Fat, whatever right. the movie might have been.
Right.
I said, you know what? Fine. We'll open this up. People can go in, see this, get a little edumacated. They, you know, have the orchestra playing. Really, really use the good sound system in there. It's an interesting experiment. But other than that, I think for that wasteland you're talking about, there wasn't much to be done there. I don't think that people were motivated to write and produce in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people, unless they were already into going and seeing the latest show, were ready to go and look for something else. So they had to branch out and say, fine, we'll just take, you know, Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny. Let's take a cartoon, put it on stage.
Right.
Yeah, they'll trip for something new. I mean, there was some good stuff out there. Madam Butterfly, Sunset Express.
True.
Rent, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
funny, I don't feel unmuted.
You are unmuted now.
I've got Star Wars all over my shorts. Was that an Imperial Star Destroyer that just came through here?
I think so.
I need to give it me four.
This is, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Hey, I have to say, thank goodness that my Roadrunner medic came up and helped me diagnose my network problem.
I see.
Which I didn't have one, but it let me know I was about to. And then, anyway, we're back.
Okay.
Just had to disable that little TSR.
Sure. Now,
so movies.
So, okay.
So they started casting the producers.
Right.
I didn't think they were going to make a sequel that I thought the play was doing so well. I don't think anyone thought the play would do well. I think they had the same idea that Leo and Max had when they put together the play idea in the to begin with in the original movie, was that it was a ludicrous idea, mm-hmm. and people thought, what? They're going to bring this Mel Brooks thing on with Nazis and dancing onto the stage. It'll never work. Don't even try. And people started to watch it. People started to watch the darn play. And this one goes, well, if they like the play, why don't we rewrite the movie? We rewrite all the movies, and people make money off of rewriting movies. They don't even know. I mean, you don't even know. If you look at the movies for the last 10 years, how many of those have been done once or twice before? Maybe under a different name, different actors, actresses. Maybe they've changed genders. So they say, let's do a movie. Why not? We'll make a little bit more money. We can get the DVD sales, which you don't get usually from the Broadway performances. So you were saying.
Well, so, I mean, did you have any good feelings about the film when you heard about it? I mean, obviously, it's a lot of people get a lot of trepidation about remakes. So
I mostly thought it sounded like a good idea, but I didn't think it was actually going to happen when I first heard about it. I figured it was one of those things they're tossing out there because it seemed to me like, yeah. But it also came about in between when Chicago moved to the big screen.
True.
And not only did it have a good stage presence, but it also had a good film release. Now, this sounds mean, but my gosh, did you see Chicago?
No.
That lady is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Could do lots of things. Anyway, so it was a different caliber of play being moved to film.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, they're going to do it. But is it, you know, I heard about, who, you know, there's different directors and stuff that's going to try to keep it true to Mel Brooks, but he's not going to be, you know, running the show. So is it going to be toned down?
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, what if they tried to make Blazing Saddles today?
Right.
Would it be, well, hi there, person. Oh, I find you not at all offensive, and in fact, I'm going to help to promote your cause, as opposed to, what did he say? He said he's near. No, hold on while I whip out my thing. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they just show us the floppy dick, but not give us the text.
Mm-hmm.
And that the lines were what made it funny. So I was like, all right, well, you know, if it comes out great, I'll rent it. You know, there's lots of things that come out. Not many of them make it into the queue on Netflix for The Wild Bill, your buddy Bill. But I wasn't very hopeful.
But
is that bad?
Nah, it's fine. But then they hired Uma, and that was good. Now the interesting thing happened. Now, okay, as you know, there is a huge show on HBO about being an extra. I think everyone really dreams about being an extra. I think people feel that they're also in the movie, and the movie business is very, it's glamorous and all this, and you can be a star. But I mean, as we're about to discover, it's kind of, it's not glamorous, and it's almost its own different strange career. And it's really hard to kind of understand all that you're doing until you do it. And,
That's sure.
So, okay, you received something in the mail about, well, go ahead.
No. This, thumbing through the newspaper, which I subscribe, but I rarely read the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I have the article lying around here someplace, February 6, 2005. And there was a little blurb in the calendar section as I was looking for something about a band that was playing. About I was looking for extras, and I saw down at the bottom of something off of Wilshire Avenue, going to be in March. I'm like, huh? All right. Oh, producers. The producers' movie is looking for some extras. I'm like, oh, really? Well, I ripped out the article, took it with me to work. It took me about 3 days to finally call the number to get to some website and stuff. And I said, well, I want to do this. They're looking for extras. I'm willing to do this. Oh, great. Where are you from? Down here in South Orange County. Well, oh, California. We haven't had many people call from California. So, are you nuts? Turns out, interesting story. Oh, probably why you invited me on the show.
I think.
You're a wise man, Jeff. It was all taking place in New York. New York City! That's right. Same place my hot sauce isn't made. And at first that took me aback, and I said, well, you know, I've never been. Never been to New York City. I'd wanted to, kind of. So I said, well, why not? Now, the reason this was being made available to people in the general public had to do with the way I remember it. I could be very, very misremembering all of this, but I thought it had to do with Martin Short and or Danny DeVito's involvement with the people at a group called formerly called the Community Food Resource Center in New York, now called Food Change, foodchange.org. And working with them and Steiner Studios, which was producing the producers movie, which is a movie about based off of the fame of the producer's play, based off of the producer's movie, which was about a fictional play called The Springtime for Hitler. So the producers, and all those other people that got involved with this organization, Food Change. And what they're making a deal was, well, you know what, anyone who wanted to make donations to this group could become an extra, just show up and follow a few rules. And I said, well, you know what, the group seems to be doing things that I could support, having to do with tax help for low-income people, as well as distribution of food and nutritional education in New York. I said, you know what, great. It's beginning of the year. I want to make sure I get my donations in early and make sure that they're tax deductible, and I get to go and be in a movie, The Producers, a Mel Brooks movie. So that was all great for me. Sure, I had to deal with getting myself out there. I had to deal with, you know, getting a little bit of time off work, you know, and scheduling all of that. I thought, why not? You know, it was so easy for me to say not to do it. Oh, it's two blocks away. It's too early in the morning. It's too late at night. I don't have anything to wear. But I said, you know, there's a lot of things you can choose to not do in life and say you never had the perfect opportunity to do it. Or you can take what's given to you and use it. And I said, well, okay, fine. I'll go do it. It'll be fun.
And you did.
I think you want to ask a question. Yeah. So that's that.
Well, okay. So.
Had you there.
Yeah, I know. So you made all the arrangements. You got your tuxedo. You flew to New York. Now, you.
Now that you started asking me questions, I want to stop you there.
Okay, now. You've been to New York before?
No, never.
Okay.
Well, actually, the way I understand it, I did go to the airport there once before, but I didn't remember it.
Okay.
But the tuxedo, you know, because this is the original was supposed to be set in the late 40s, early 50s, right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things for the gents. They said, you know, ladies, you know, they wanted to do fittings and stuff down off of at Steiner Studios and at the E.K. Skelton and all this sort of place. But for the men, they said, well, look, we're not going to have you dressed in period dresses. If you have a tux that works for that era, great. If not, go rent one. But you got to send us the photos. Because, frankly, they didn't want people showing up in some sort of wedding singer purple outfit, you know,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't fit for the period.
Sure.
They also had other things, you know. The women, they bring the jewelry. We'll tell you if it's going to make it in. Otherwise, we'll be handing out costume jewelry and stuff like that. The women, they said, you know what? let us see the natural length of your hair. We're going to be doing it up anyway. The men, it was like, all right, unless we see the picture and say it's okay, no mustaches, no beards, no long hair, no ponytail, you know, glasses. You know, they had to, you know, basically sign off if you were going to show glasses because they had to have the right sort of style and frame, you know. So it was very picky. And, you know, for a lot of those people, it was like, okay, go in, get a fitting that hasn't been waiting for you. For me, I didn't have that luxury to go out 2 weeks before to Manhattan or Long Island and get a fitting and then come back home, go to work, and then go back out 2 weeks later. I had to go down to Genghis or After Eight or some sort of tuxedo shop and just sort of try to explain to them, no, I'm not going to prom with my niece. I need something that doesn't make me look like a pimp daddy or a daddy pimp, but a little bit older style. And, you know, so I had to look for the help staff behind the desk and didn't have the tattoo or the piercing. Not that the gentleman who helped me did not have a tattoo. It was just one of those that I didn't get to see, and he let me know it was a battleship.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I flew up to New York, like you were saying.
Okay. And you – now, where was it shot?
The filming of this took place at the – oh, my gosh, did I just forget the name of the darn place? I want to say St. James Theater.
Okay.
I should be able to validate that. But it was at the exact same theater that the play was showing at. In fact, I took the opportunity, you know, since I knew I was going out, I said, you know what, I'm going to really make this extremely worthwhile. If possible, I'm going to see the play on Broadway before I go and sit down. So it was like, it was like triple dip. My first time to New York City, my first time to see a Broadway play on Broadway, it happened to be the producers, and then the next day in the filming of the next producer's movie. So I want to say the St. James. I'm looking up the pictures now, but we can go forward until I figure it out.
Okay.
Works for me.
So, and you stayed a little ways away in a fairly nice hotel. And so...
Oh, yeah, the Millennium. Yeah. I was very impressed. I was very impressed by the I relied on my corporate travel people to get... suggest a hotel and set me up. And I guess they must have gotten me some sort of deal because I guess my name must rhyme with the first name of someone else high up in the company or something. But it was quite an experience. Very, you know, a private entrance. You know, everyone there knew your name as you came in the door. They didn't have – it wasn't like a countertop when you check in. It was a see-through glass top, glass-legged desk poised there with a computer and a headset – and they were just ready to go. It was it was just totally different.
Wow.
Mm.
Now,
I mean,
you...
Yeah.
Okay, so you were saying it was a little cold, and you had to rush over and check in.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, also, I hadn't been in cold... and some sort of fun purpose in a long time. And, you know, when I came down early the morning for the thing, we had to be there at like 8 a.m. or something like that. And I didn't think that was too problem because I usually get up pretty early anyway. But it was 37, 38 degrees out there. And not only was it that, but it was quite gusty with the whole wind situation. So it was cold. It had the wind going on. Excuse me. And did I disconnect?
No.
Hello? Okay,
hello.
That's good
hello.
To know. All right. I'm just not seeing the screen anymore. But,
yeah,
okay.
I keep hearing little dings here. So.
Yeah, different parts of my computer are falling off. Some sort of Mad Max machine I've built here. So I had to... just go down the street to get over to the Marriott or the Hilton. It was just across the street, really. And, you know, I'm in my tux. I'm worried because I've got the slippery-soled shoes. You know, I forgot to wear my own shoes instead. And I'm worried because I get to the right place, I think, but I can't find anybody. Well, luckily, every now and then it works fine. You have to go up these big escalators, and I'm going up the escalator in this lady obviously dressed up for a ball or some sort of event. You know, at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning, this was not what you consider everyday wear anywhere, unless you're back in some sort of weird era. And she's like, oh, well, what are you here for? And I'm like, well, I'm going up to be an extra in the producers, you know, and it's part of a deal with foodchange.org. She goes, oh, well, that's really nice. I'm also involved with the producers. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's really great. And I said, so, you know, do you, you know, you live around here? She goes, oh, yeah, we don't live very far at all. Like, oh, okay. You know, because, you know, we work here in the city. I go, oh, are you in the entertainment field or are you another contributor? She goes, well, I'm both, actually. And she mentioned her name, Miss Steiner, you know, from Steiner Studios.
Mm.
And, of course, my demeanor changed completely, you know, and I signed off on, you know, okay, I'm not going to hit on her. Because I read up beforehand, she's already married. So it wouldn't really be worth my time. But it was nice to chat with her. And we got up there and they had little lines set up. You know, they had the SAG members, the real actors and extras. They went over to one area. They had some other type of extras who were the paid extras and stuff like that went to a second area. And then the third area was, you know, for the food change change folks. And, you know, we got these cool bags with stuff and thank yous and literature. And we were cool. We were hip. We were happy. We were talking and giggling. You know, the other people were on their cell phones talking to their agents or reading through, you know, the trade papers or whatever, or really, really, really annoyingly poring over and critiquing the food that was laid out for them. Now, the food change people, yeah, we got watered soda and stuff, and they did bring us food, but it wasn't like fancy, fancy. Now, as you went to the paid extras, and you know, and the lower grade paid, you know, people, they had stuff in, and they had just enough that they could look at three or four things and decide that the one thing they wanted wasn't there, and they were going to raise a stink because, what a bunch of spoiled children. And then at the big table, the big kids' tables, you know, they just had stuff that was brought in. I mean, they could be having sushi 8 a.m. in the morning. They could be having, you know, Kobe beef flown in the night before. Who knows? They were having a good time. This was just another deal for them. But for me and the other 200 to 500 people, actually, it was 250 I saw. I was surprised. It seemed like a lot of people. But turns out it was like about 250. You know, we were having a blast, you know. We did a lot of stuff before. What you wanted me to get to was the running across the street in the cold. It comes pretty far in the story, but I'm going to jump to it. Because we had to do it. Finally, Group W was called, and I was part of Group W. And like a bunch of commandos, we stood up and we said, sir, what? And they let us down the stairs. They said, look, we're going to be going across the street, down the block, and into some doors. Now, ladies, put these bags over your heads. A few of us guys giggled because, you know. it was windy. And they had spent a lot of time putting their hair together for them. Also, they were wearing gowns and dresses. And they were full length. And I tell you what, that wind, well, it was going to sail some of them like umbrellas, okay, in a bad cartoon. So, you know, they weren't as worried about the guys. But, you know, they did have policemen out there stopping traffic for us to cross the streets. And I thought, here we are, dressed up like who knows what, running across these streets in the bitter cold, in the wind. I'm like, this is a blast. Here's a policeman wearing a white glove, making three taxi cabs and a truck stop so a bunch of Fruit Loops can run across the street and go down to the theater. It was unreal. Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah. I mean, it must have been really, just the whole thing must have been really surreal, though. I think just about whatever you did, it's like, I could be at work, but I'm here. I mean,
you know, that thought came up a couple times. It came up the night before.
Mm-hmm.
It came up more so later in the day because when I said that we started at 8, you know, that meant that, you know, I got up and ate breakfast and showered and then started putting on a tuxedo well before, you know, because I figured, well, okay, it took me about 15 minutes to get there last night, and I was, you know, pretty confident. Now I'm going to be in my tuxedo. I don't want to be late, be the last one, so I leave there at 7:30, blah, blah, blah. So it was an early morning. I'll let you in on a little secret about the end of this whole story. I got home about midnight.
Hmm.
It was a long day.
Yeah.
It was a very, very long day. So much so that at one point we started to see there was some discussion, there was some delays and stuff going on. You know, and I was going, well, I wonder why they're taking so long to actually get us to do something because they have us here. Turns out, big portion of the SAG people, they were past their 8 hours. And it came down to, from what we heard, you know, overhearing discussions, they either wanted to know if another hot meal was coming in or not. And I heard the discussion, you know what, we don't have one, but we will pay you, and he mentioned some other scale. I don't know if it's an X, something different than whatever they were being paid beforehand. And that wasn't enough. It wasn't, and now, granted, I don't know. You know, if you're doing 5 of these a week and this is your day thing, and you're like, look, I can't afford to miss meals. That's something I'm doing for my nutrition and diet and stuff like that. That's important to me. But, you know, when we saw them, it's like, okay, this is their thing. They didn't like what they had last time. Now they don't want to do any more work unless they get, you know, another meal, another 2-hour break for it. They let them go. Great news for us. They said, you know what? We're going to move you all forward in these nice spots, you know, in the brighter lights closer to the stage. And because continuity has been broken, we're going to reshoot a lot of scenes, and now you guys are going to be much more in them.
Wow.
And you know what? We kept trooping on. I mean, every now and then someone said, I'm kind of tired. Like, all you got to do is sit here and smile. How much does it take?
Right.
I mean, it's one thing, you know, here was people being paid to be here, you know, or doing it for a credit or something like that to further their career, and they were out. And here was a group of people that paid for the privilege of sitting in the chair.
Right.
And by golly, we were going to sit the heck out of that chair. We were going to make that chair remember our name.
Now, okay, what's interesting is there's almost like a pecking order or hierarchy of extras.
I think there is. I couldn't figure it out completely, but you could sense it.
I just think it is so weird that there's almost like this cottage industry of I'm an extra. You know, and I've never seen the show, you know, Ricky Gervais's show on HBO. I hear it's very funny, but it's just, I'm going to say something just very crazy and mean or whatever, but it's like people that work at Disneyland, I know they are never going to make millions of dollars, but they're going to say, I work at Disneyland, and that's really it, you know? And then the next couple of questions are, have you seen any stars? Well, yeah, I saw the back of, Sandra Bullock's head one time and whatever. And it's just the same thing of, I am an extra. I work for, you know, SAG, and I have my SAG card and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you're an extra, though. I mean, you're an extra, okay? I mean,
That's funny because, like, a while ago, you know, I was going up for the AFTRA stuff, and they have a deal with the Film Trade TV Radio Association, a deal with AFTRA and SAG transferability and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what? I'm not making money doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to keep the card current. I'm having a blast. And even when I was making money or some sort of barter system, I was like, you know what? This is on the side. I don't want to get caught up in having to be asked any questions about voting on some sort of policy or giving an opinion on some sort of topic that actually matters to the people that are dealing with it day to day. You know, so
right.
Yeah, I was like, look, I got my card. Great. I got three library cards. So I want to go check out a book. I can set you up, You know, but yeah, different things motivate different people. And so if it makes them happy, I say good.
Yeah. And
you know,
it was warm under the lights. Right.
Sure. Yeah. It's funny because although the light shone a lot farther than the warmth came,
okay.
You know, there was a lot of light focus on the stage, so they felt it more. For us, the warmth came from the press of bodies.
Mm-hmm.
The theater seating was not that much more comfortable than your average movie theater seating, except it was actually a little bit closer because you didn't have cup holders.
Mm, okay.
Right? You didn't have the thick armrest. So we were in bodies, and we moved around very infrequently. And every now and then people would be running up and down, powdering your face with makeup and stuff to reduce the glare or this or that, or to make sure they go, you know what, yeah, things moved. You know, touching up hair with spray and gel to keep it in place, even though a wind gust would come racing down at your ankles and up the skirts, and you'd see things happen. It was the press of bodies that kept us warm, much more so than the lights. Although the lights is one of those things that adds and it builds like a good hot sauce, where you take the first drop, you go, that's not bad. But every drop adds double the power because it's that creeper thing that just sort of builds upon the last and never goes away.
Now, you were involved with a couple of scenes. There was something toward the back of a finale scene that you were filming and something else. And what I'm trying to do is, I mean, if people watch the DVD now, that maybe they can kind of look and say, well, I don't know, maybe it's that fuzzy thing over to the left, or maybe it's the right, I don't know, something. But I mean,
If you're gonna watch the DVD at the during the opening night sequence when they're actually performing Springtime for Hitler on the stage, and they're getting towards the end, and basically the audience at this point now loves the play.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, is a problem for the producers of the movie, the play. But for the director and the other people who didn't know it was supposed to be a flop, they're ecstatic about it. And one of the sidekicks of the choreographer comes, you know, prepares himself. He has this bouquet of flowers as they all go to take the bow. And he goes running down the aisle with tears of joy and all that sort of stuff. So where he starts his run from at the top of the aisle was about a row behind me. So when they were practicing that, he was, and I was on the aisle. I was on an aisle, and I had a lady next to me with sort of an orange-yellow bouquet. I'm trying to remember, but I think the dress was greenish. We couldn't take cameras. That was a huge drawback. I missed that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Although later on I found out people snuck them in.
Sure.
And when they took pictures, they were not berated for it, so I felt bad for not trying to break the rules. But I wasn't your buddy Bill at that point for a lot of that. I was just William following orders, Yavol, Herr, whatever, mm-hmm. Steiner. Actually, I wonder if that fit. I wonder if they have any relevant. Anyway, so he would start, he'd line up there, and, you know, and they'd have him get into the crying character mode, standing there in the aisle. You could tell he was exhausted from the energy put into the run. He was exhausted from the sweat. You know, when you have to perform and you're nervous about something, or even if you just know you're on, your body goes into a whole different approach to things, and your adrenal glands get influenced. And you could tell this person was putting stuff into this. And when you'd watch it back, you'd say, oh, here comes some guy. He had to run down the carpet, you know, up from down the aisles, down to the stage, and throw a bouquet up there. But watching him do it and seeing the energy put into it, the prep standing there to get into the zone, to get the tears and stuff, I was impressed. I was impressed by the amount of work and effort it took for those few moments. And the care it took with all the people doing the lighting, the sound, the cameras, the makeup, the hair, all the equipment that was being handled for that moment. I was really impressed. I was like, wow. And luckily I took all that knowledge and we were able to apply it to, wait, we did Revenge of the Sox before this. If you're looking on the DVD, during the scene right before, and there's a few scenes also where they show crowd reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Your best chance to see me is in a crowd reaction if you look in the upper right area near the right-hand side of an aisle. right hand as you face from the stage out. A lot of the big close-up scenes are people and friends of the studio.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. Now, what's actually kind of good now is a lot of folks have plasma high-def TVs now. And so they may be able to see you. So,
My gosh, I'd love to go and see that. I mean, if you've got a big large screen LCD or plasma or projection TV, let me know. Because maybe right after we watch the Super Bowl, we can look at my DVD. And you know what? After we watch the Super Bowl, we don't even have to look at my DVD. Just let me come over and watch the Super Bowl there. Please?
Absolutely. Now, what's – and so that pretty much was it. You came home at midnight. Did you do any type of sightseeing after or no? It was
– Oh, that day? Monday? Mm-hmm. No. But I had gotten in about midday Saturday beforehand. So I did sightseeing on Saturday and Sunday, and then I went and saw the play Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. So I got to the next day. You know, mostly I spent going to the local coffee shop, walking around a little bit. Wasn't quite as cold. They're saying, you know, it was going to be like 42. It was getting warm or something. And chatting with the reception and door person before waiting for the cab. You know, just having a nice mellow. Hi, I'm here. Oh, look, there's Times Square. There's Rockefeller Center. Look at the kids on the ice. Isn't it nice? Oh, yes, that's my tux. Let's not wrinkle it. How was it last night? Oh, well, we didn't finish filming until midnight, but I came back and I was tired, so I just zonked out. I liked being able to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we didn't finish filming until about 10, but then we had to talk to things and do some paperwork and handle a few things before they let us go at midnight. You know, but it was a good day of filming. Just toss it around. Oh, so, you know, are you going from New York to California to visit, or are you heading back home? No, I'm going back home after a tough day of filming. And, of course, on the next day I went to work. And so what were you doing? I just had a couple days off. Completely separate from anything. Anything going on at work or that I was sharing at work. Your buddy Bill, the Bill Williams separation, was completely intact at that time.
Yeah. Now, we're going to have to do a show, you know, I don't know, because I kind of like to wrap it up here. I kind of want to wrap it up.
I think that's a good point.
Before the whole thing just kind of goes. But, I mean, one day I'd like to talk to you about the difference between New York and L.A., and just what's different about it, because you've been to New York, you know, and you've been to L.A. So I think there's some interesting things to talk about. I also want to talk about your stand-up past and present time to time, because you do stand up and you are funny. And
the microphone and Viagra.
Then
two things to help me stand up.
Okay. If they leave this on the server on TalkShoe, that's going to be something. But anyway, they're not recording this. So I don't know how they can pull mine. So
this is PG.
Yeah, it is. So right. Here's another thing: is that have you had any other like Hollywood moments where you've worked in the biz or you've done anything else besides stand up and the producers?
Oh, besides stand up and the producers, I, unless you know something I've forgotten, I have no other claims to fame in that whole arena. Although,
okay.
I would like to try it as a goof.
Yeah. Well, we will do a show, and I want to talk about Hollywood stories, and I will tell my story about working on the Star Jones show, the Jones and Jury show. I do have some stories, and I will tell them.
What's the movie you were in?
I was not in a movie. What movie? I wasn't in a movie.
That movie, that film, you were interviewed. You were the guy walking and asked about the women in Star Wars.
That's right. Yes, I was in the Millennium's End, The Phantom Menace,
Hi, Randy.
Fad, the FAD, Far Away Discourse production film of Millennium's End. Yes, and the...
So, yeah, we got to do that. I feel bad because, you know, I kind of rambled on about some other things. I kept us from getting to the Wild Vacation stories.
Well, that's fine. No. This evening has been a wild ride, to say the least. So, with that, I do want to let the listeners know and remind myself that at RoneyZone.com, that's RoneyZone.com, there are a number of wonderful shows. One is Rony Zone Radio, which is a downloadable and it is subscribable. It's also available on iTunes. And there are a number of other shows. There is the award-winning Star Wars parody audio show, Tatooine TV. And there's also the audio parody show, Ear Giggles. And it's all available at RoneyZone.com. And for myself and for Mr.
William Lundeen.
William Lundeen. We want to say thank you so much for listening. We sure appreciate it. And thanks for putting up with the little glitches along the way. And that is it for tonight. And we will see you next time on Rony Zone Radio.